Welcome to Coach Your Brains Out, the show that explores learning from the top minds in volleyball and beyond. With your hosts, John Mayer, Billy Allen, Andrew Fuller, and Nils Nielsen.
Today, we're happy to welcome to the show performance psychologist, Dr. Drew Brannon. Drew's the co-founder of Amplos. Drew, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, it's great to be here, John. I appreciate you guys giving me the opportunity.
So why? What is Amplos, and what does that word mean, and why that word?
Yeah, that's a question we get a good bit, actually. So it's the derivative of the word grow from the Latin language, and we really kind of landed on that, and that we were previously called Synergy Performance, and which was a suitable name also, but that as we started to kind of think about what's a name that really is at the heart of and captures all that we do. We felt like that word grow was the one, and that, you know, whether we're working with an individual or a team or an organization, whoever it might be, foundationally and fundamentally, what we're trying to help them do is get better and grow. So that was Amplos became the winner, and we like where we are there.
Nice. And to start off, we wanted to start by addressing how athletes can compete right now when maybe their traditional competition isn't happening. What would be the first thing you'd advise for an athlete who maybe had their high school or college season taken from them?
Yeah, there's been a bunch of that. In fact, my kids have been impacted by that. They were each, all three of them, really kind of getting to the heart of their spring seasons. And then just in the blink of an eye, like many other athletes, gone, over. So I think, first of all, they've got to be like, you got to give people permission to be human and just acknowledge the disappointment in that and give them a space to talk about that and be honest with those emotions. That's really, really important. I think if you don't allow that, people tend to kind of move into some of those spaces of just frustration and resentment. And, those aren't good emotions or good places to be. So I think you got to process it well. And then I think you have to really circle back to, my view has always been that it's critical for athletes to pursue growth and development independent of anything and everything else. So like I was a college athlete. I certainly, I want to win. I'm competitive. I want people to win. They want to win. So I understand the way the whole dynamic works of going out to train and get better in order to improve your outcomes. I get that. But I think on a larger, kind of bigger picture view, you're better served to just have the mindset of, I'm going to pursue improvement and just see where that goes. And so although they can't compete right now, many can't, and they haven't been able to the spring and summer, there's nothing standing in the way of people improving and developing and getting better. And so I think, I challenge athletes to exercise some of those competitive juices through improvement and measuring against themselves.
I like that a lot. Do you think of it as improvement still in their craft, or are you saying like, and maybe something outside of their sport or whatever it is that you want to be great at?
I think both. I really do. Certainly in their craft, because they're hopefully people are passionate about, the opportunities with that and the vision they might have for that. But then outside of their sport or their craft, I'll tell you one thing that's been really interesting for me to observe over the last 5 months with athletes is I've challenged them to like start something new, pick up something new and how healthy that is, whether it's, and I'm really kind of talking the whole gamut, like play around with playing the guitar or learn how to play chess or do something that requires you to experience frustration and deal with uncertainty and see yourself grow and improve. So yeah, I think it's the whole gamut of who they are as a person.
Yeah, I love that. We actually did something similar to that with my team. We took it from Trevor Reagan. I don't know if you know him, but Train Ugly. But we did this anti-talent show where you had to pick a skill you're not good at and then film your growth and then perform in front of the team. And that was really experiencing learning and feeling the frustration of it.
Yeah, no, I like that a lot. I maybe on another conversation, you can tell me about some of the best acts, but that sounds like a good time.
Yeah. I'll have to send you a couple clips. It was pretty cool.
Yeah. That's cool.
So Billy he's competing professionally in beach volleyball, and there's really no sense of when the next pro tournament's going to be. So do you think, you know, maybe he's learning, but do you rest the more the competitive muscles? You know, do you need to have downtime for your brain and think about, you know, constantly winning?
Yeah, that's of course, you know, different people would have different opinions on that. Here's where I would shake out on it is I think that when you are still in the realm of, you know, so Billy still being a competitive athlete and competing professionally, I think you want to stay near to that in whatever ways you can. And here's why, like you might, I'm sure each of you, you know, John, I know you competed for a long time and Billy's still in it, but you might've had layoffs at any given time where maybe it was injury or whatever the reason was, where you went however many months between competitions. And for most people, when you re-entered that and you got back into it for that first time back, the nerves, you know, the more butterflies and your heart rate's up and you might have some dry mouth and sweaty palms and you feel that to a greater extent. And sometimes the primary reason is it's just been a while. So although, you know, Billy, you can't do what you would normally do in the ways you would do it, I think finding creative ways to still create pressure and some level of anxiety and just, you know, do what's possible to replicate some of those feelings you would get on a game day. Now I know that requires some creativity, but I think you're going to get a rest from some of that by default, because there just aren't many things out there. I would just land in trying to recreate what you're able to.
For Billy, I think that could be playing Settlers of Catan with his wife and son. So
yeah. I think doing this podcast, lots of anxiety.
there you go.
No, I was just going to say, wow, it's been a while since I've played Settlers, but I've had many good times playing it. So
it gets heated. It gets intense. The juices get going.
What about mental training? Is there anything off the field or away from their sport that athletes could be doing right now? Any exercises that would maybe improve that area?
Yeah, what I like to challenge folks to do is kind of a form of – some people use the word visualization, some use imagery, it just kind of depends, but to create an exercise where you get some highlight clips of you and, you know, you might get there at your computer and you start playing the clip and you watch it and maybe you watch it again and then you pause it. And then I like to ask athletes to, like, you know, get up out of your chair and slowly engage in that movement that you saw in that clip. And as you're doing the movement to really try to kind of dial into your recollection of what did that feel like? And what do I, what was I thinking at that time? And what do I remember? And what did it, cause for many athletes, the feels and smells and sounds of competition have become kind of foreign at this point. It's been a long time, like we said a second ago. So doing what you can in a multi-sensory way to align to that and experience that is some of the best mental type training you really can be doing right now. And then I think the next step of that is to then begin thinking about what lies ahead. And I know we don't have clarity around that, but doing some visualization of you in future games, future opponents, future situations, managing anxiety, managing adversity, and really kind of creating that image in your mind of what you want that to look like.
And do you say for like visualization or you know, watching, I don't know, I guess you said highlight reel, is there value in looking at mistakes and, you know, going through that visualization and responding to that?
Sure. Yeah. I think, and then there is, but then the other skill that I think is relevant you can bring in there is a term I'm sure you guys are familiar with and have done work with in the space of self-talk, just those conversations we have with ourselves in our mind. And particularly people who really lean toward the heavy self-critic, watching mistakes and then kind of hitting the pause on that and getting a mental rep in that moment of kind of the how you want to speak to yourself, the types of things you want to say in that situation. You might even remember what you did compared to what you should have done. So those are ways you can get mental reps. You know, if you really want to take that to the, you know, next step further would be, if you have the ability to do this, would be to watch an entire game clip, whatever, depending on what sport you play. And if you can see yourself and kind of create a journal or a log where at different situations you're writing out a good self-talk, what would be the right you know, mental phrase or target for my thinking, and just getting reps at doing that, because people don't always understand that self-talk is a good example of a skill that's a repetition-based skill. And one of the reasons why in certain scenarios people say all the wrong things to themselves is because they've done it so many times. And so they just have built this mental memory, this mental skill memory of, when I do this, here's how I react.
Right.
And so the more reps of the right nature you can get, the more you're truly training the mental skills you need to have.
Right. That makes sense. Yeah, because I love the idea, but I notice when I do watch film with athletes, they're really good at hunting the negative, and they'll point out, even when I'm trying to make a point, like, you know, show something productive, their first thought is, you know, they notice the negative. So I wonder, is there like some sort of system they could set up so that, because I could just see an athlete watching them on their own and just every first response, oh, I messed that up, oh, I made that mistake. Like, how can they make sure that the self-talk is more productive?
Yeah, so the kind of the tool or a little bit of a blueprint that I use in that situation would be, we need to train them to just flip the coin. What I just call flip the coin, where they might have kind of a default setting right now, where as soon as they see that mistake on film, their reaction is what you just described, of kind of this immediate kind of trigger, this negative trigger.
Mm-hmm.
And so the other side of that coin is not necessarily just it's not about just a positive thought, but it's what I would call a more functional or productive thought. And so we want to flip the coin, and after we've recognized where we don't want to be, and immediately kind of feed ourselves that functional thought that's going to direct our next step. That's the whole idea, is the thought needs to drive the next needed behavior, because the behavior is the root out of whatever space that we're in that we don't want to be in.
Love it. Sounds good. I want to move on to what coaches can be doing. You know, coaches have been much more disconnected, a lot more kind of digital space, you know, Zoom sessions, things like that. And it's been as long as, at least for my team, since March that we've been separated. So what can coaches be doing to stay connected and be, you know, still building culture and healthy relationships?
Yeah, it's been a really unique and tough time. And I know that I've had a lot of good conversations with coaches who have been doing this a long time, who, you know, fortunately are asking all these questions you're describing of like, you know, what do I do with this? This is such uncharted waters. How do we manage this? One of the places that I've really kind of encouraged them to go is to just try to excel in the area of asking great questions. You know, questions that drive people kind of into themselves with healthy self-reflection, introspection. It can be a fantastic time to nurture relationships and learn people in ways and on levels that otherwise you just might not have been able to do, because, you know, the pace is slower. You know, there's so much that can't happen. So I think engaging your team and then helping create conversations for the team to have with the team in areas and subject matters that maybe you typically wouldn't, whatever that might look like.
Can you give us some examples of maybe some of those probing questions that would lead to that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, asking people to discuss, how do you define success? Tell me about a time you were disappointed in yourself. You know, if we're talking about a collegiate setting, when you asking somebody, hey, when you finish here, when you finish your time here, wherever here is, how do you want people to describe you when you're wrapping up? And then and even getting into kind of real personal like questions where you, like I like asking the question, let's imagine in your mind you're at your, you know, 65th birthday party and people are going to stand up and talk about you. What do you want them to say? And then kind of peel back on that and ask yourself, all right, well, given what my life looks like right now, am I positioning myself for those things to be true? I think questions like that can give you glimpses into a person's heart and their soul and their mind that, again, like I think one of the reasons we don't do things like that when we aren't living through a pandemic is just pace. You know, we're running and gunning, and we aren't necessarily facilitating opportunities to talk in ways like that.
Yeah, that's cool. And then what about as coaches, what can they be doing to improve themselves, I guess, generally, but also especially right now when maybe they have less time with their athletes?
Yeah. You know, I think that certainly taking time to revisit, and for some coaches, maybe this is visit if they haven't done this yet, and write out and clearly put together your philosophy of coaching. Like, what do you believe drives high performance? What do you believe? You know, I always talk about the, like, what's your plan to win? And when I say win, I'm talking about every facet of your program. Like, I've never met a coach who didn't want to establish, maintain, and sustain a winning program. So, like, what are the key tenets of that? And what are the key values of that? I think it's a great time to kind of deconstruct and then reconstruct the DNA of your program. And then I think another thing that it's an idea I've tried to position for coaches is go create a curriculum or a course, almost like find something that a nuanced type area within your sport that maybe you want to know more about, and just go dive deep in that. And, you know, maybe it's motor learning, maybe it's block and variable practice. I don't know, but like go dive deep in an area you haven't in the past and become a subject matter expert.
Yeah, that's cool. And do you have your own philosophy when it comes to working with athletes and doing your job that you could share with us?
Yeah, I do. Absolutely. So it's really a three-step sequence, beginning with, and this is what I really believe drives growth in people, awareness followed by action, followed by accountability. And so there's a lot in that kind of awareness stage where we are asking the right questions, considering the right input sources, paying attention to the variables that are present. The question I like to ask people is, what are the variables that are present when you're at your best? Like, let's study success in that way. But it's that discovery phase of understanding, all right, what are the voids? What are the disconnects? What are the strengths? And then aligning on what am I after? What are my objectives? Then we move into action phase of what do you need to do differently? What are the behaviors that need to change? And then thirdly, accountability, because what do we know about human nature? It's that people need accountability sources to help them stay committed to and focused on the things they say that are important to them. You know, I think coach is a great example of that. What's one of the most powerful things a coach can provide to an athlete is that accountability that comes in the form of encouragement and motivation and inspiration, and at times, you know, constructive feedback, the whole gamut.
And then what about for coaches, you know, who thrive on competing? And I think a lot of coaches maybe feel success from wins and losses. But, you know, if you don't have that now, how can you define, you know, that you're being successful as a coach?
Yeah, I think a couple different things that I think can be helpful. One is it's a great time to do some, like, 360 feedback, surveying of your people internally, you know, gather some data on the thing, you know, like what the things that you have decided are going to be important in your program. Let's measure that and see if that's happening. And I think that's one way to try to define success right now, and to see if the things that you say are important are in fact coming across that way to others. And then on a real practical, concrete level, like I think about a coach I was talking to recently who, because of the busyness that his life tends to look like, doesn't have enough time for exercise. He doesn't prioritize exercise during the typical world he's living in. And so he's decided that over the last several months, he's going to try to improve his 5K running time as much as he possibly can. And so he's training and measuring himself and competing. And I know that's a very specific area, but things like that of like, let's pick something and go get better and compete against yourself.
Yeah, that's great. What about, you mentioned the 360 feedback. I feel like leaders a lot of times love giving feedback, but don't always get it. So where does that feedback come from? Who within your group?
Well, like let's use the example of like a collegiate athletic program in any sport, really. Let's say it's the head coach who's initiating this discovery process. What I would suggest or advise in that scenario would be to create an anonymous online, like just use an online platform. There's tons of them, and think about your key questions, create some rating systems. And we're asking for this feedback from all aspects of that unit, in that we're asking players to report back on this. We're asking staff, like on assistant coaches, depending on how the program is situated, director of ops, strength and conditioning, nutrition, everyone kind of weighing in on this. And then I would kind of go upstream as well, whether it's sport administrator, director of athletics, so I don't know who that person reports to, but bring in as many angles as possible upstream and downstream to see what people have to say. And I think it's a bold, courageous, vulnerable move by a leader. But quite frankly, I think those are some of the markers of great leaders, is they are those things and they're willing to ask for feedback.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I love the anonymous factor of it. I think you'll get a lot more honesty, yep, at least from the people maybe who are perceived as under you, you know, that you're leading.
Yeah. And I think just one final thought on that is what I've seen over time as I've been a part of those is the way you frame that work is everything. So there has to be at the outset, before anyone is receiving any kind of links to do anything, there has to be a very focused, targeted conversation about purpose and objectives. And it needs to be conveyed in a way that demonstrates genuine vulnerability and desire for learning. Because there's a huge difference between what I just described versus something just shows up in your inbox one day and you aren't entirely sure what it is or why you're doing it. Those processes tend to be a waste of time if you do it the way that I just described a second ago, if you don't frame it correctly.
Right. Yeah, that's great.
That was part one of our conversation with Drew Brannon. Join us next week when Drew's back to talk about pressure here on Coach Your Brains Out by Gold Medal Squared.